Earth is a very small stage.
I think it's much more interesting to live not knowing than to have answers which might be wrong.
It's not really about going to another star system. It's about how do we improve life here on Earth.
Not only the question, but the way you try to solve it.
Beauty at this dimension, 1 centimeter, is also beauty at a smaller dimension.
Good evening, and welcome to UBC Sharing Science Radio. We're broadcasting live from 101.9 CITR-FM here on unceded Musqueam territory at the University of British Columbia. I'm your host, Rohit Singla, and tonight we have a very special show for you. It's our first show ever! UBC Sharing Science Radio is a weekly program dedicated to bringing you a healthy dose of science news, local events, and interviews with the members of the science community. But first, let's see who's with me tonight.
Hi, I'm Emil.
I'm Sam.
Hi, this is Alan.
Hi, this is Teresa.
On tonight's show, we're going to hear about the secrets of bubbles, investigate what beer does for your attractiveness, and hear about someone who got drunk without drinking.
Is beauty in the eye of the beholder or the beer holder? A group of scientists in France decided to investigate if people consider themselves to be more attractive under the influence of alcohol, or if the mere illusion of drinking alcoholic beverages have the same effect. In the experiment consisting of 90 men, half of the group drank alcoholic drinks, and of this group, only half were told that it was alcohol in the drinks, the other half were told it was non-alcoholic drinks. The other half of the volunteers were all given non-alcoholic drinks, but half of these were actually told that the drink contained alcohol, while the others were told the truth that it was non-alcoholic drinks. So, after conducting the experiment, all the volunteers were asked to rate how attractive they felt through a questionnaire. And in addition to this, they had to prepare a short ad for the made-up company that supposedly gave out free drinks for this experiment. And this ad was then video filmed. An independent panel of female then got to rate how attractive the men were in these videos. So, the results, well, not surprisingly, none of the men were considered to be more attractive under the influence of alcohol. But what is more interesting is that the men who were told that they were drinking alcohol considered themselves to be more attractive than the men who were told they were drinking non-alcoholic drinks. That was completely independent to if they were actually were drinking alcohol. So both people who drank alcohol and were told so, and those who were drinking non-alcoholic drinks under the belief that the drink contained alcohol, thought that they were more attractive.
In 2013, medical professionals down in Texas were presented with a 61-year-old man that appeared to be under the intoxicating effects of alcohol. The peculiar thing was he had not consumed any alcohol that day or even in the days before. Gut fermentation syndrome, also known as autobrewery syndrome, is caused by the colonization of microbes in the human gut that end up producing ethanol from the sugars that we eat and drink. This intoxicating effect results in elevated blood alcohol content and the typical intoxicating effects that we normally see when we consume alcohol. So the 61-year-old man showed up to the clinic with a 5-year history of unexplained intoxication. After a surgery for a broken foot in 2004, he continued to feel excessively intoxicated after 2 beers, sometimes even less. His wife, who happened to be a nurse, began a little bit of a research task on her own. She began to monitor his blood alcohol content at home and found that his blood alcohol content was much higher than the normal level that you would see, which would be 0 when you don't drink any alcohol. Sometimes his blood alcohol content would be 4 times the level of the legal driving limit in the US and Canada, which is 0.08. When the symptoms became so severe, the individual ended up going to a gastroenterologist, a specialist in the study of the gut microbiome, to determine what was going on in his body that resulted in him being so intoxicated without drinking. At first, he was labeled as a closet drinker because they could not determine why his blood alcohol content was so high, despite his constant reaffirmation that he had not been drinking that day. In order to confirm that this was the truth, he was locked in a 24-hour overnight observation room where only medical professionals were able to reach this individual in order to take blood alcohol content levels. Every 4 hours, they determined that his blood alcohol content, after having drank carbohydrates and sugars, continued to elevate throughout the day. The individual was then treated with antibiotics in order to kill the microbes in his gut. And 10 weeks after this treatment, the individual no longer showed any symptoms of elevated blood alcohol content without drinking, despite having a high sugar and a high carbohydrate diet.
So, what do sound waves have to do with beer? Well, in fact, they can give you the perfect head of foam. A recent Indiegogo campaign named Physics is trying to do just that. Physics, that's with an F-I-Z-Z, uses sound waves and fluid dynamics to improve the quality of your foam. This gadget is a portable beer device that influences the bubble-making process in beer. High-frequency sound waves are introduced when the bubbles start to form, resulting in a more compact structure of bubbles. Then, by draining the liquid beer under pressure and gravity, and then coating them with a protein, the bubbles are prevented from merging together. These smaller and denser bubbles result in a creamy, more delicious foam for your beer. Who knew that there is science and engineering in bubble making?
In a newly poured pint of Guinness, some of the bubbles appear to sink. We're used to bubbles floating, so what causes this Irish stout to have such counterintuitive behavior? The shape of the pint glass, narrow at the bottom, wide at the top, is the culprit. The bubbles that form on the narrow bottom drag the beer along with them as they float to the top, creating a column of rising liquid in the middle of the glass. At the top, this liquid returns to the bottom by sinking near the edge of the glass, sweeping down some of the bubbles in the foam. Using a glass where the bottom is wider than the top causes the opposite effect. Bubbles rise along the edges and sink in the middle. Benilov and co-workers modeled this bottoms-up behavior on a computer in a 2012 paper in the American Journal of Physics. Their work has potential applications in improving the efficiency of industrial chemical reactions where foam is formed. So the next time you order an Irish stout, request it in another type of glass. And cheers to science.
So before we get too in-depth about the beer here, let's take a step back and talk about the brewing process. Sam, could you enlighten us, please?
Sure, Rohit. The brewing process can be split into five major components. The first one is malting. That's where we put the cereal grains that we're using, whether it's rice, corn, or barley, which is the most common one used for beer. We put those into water and we cause the seeds to start sprouting. When the seeds start sprouting, that's when they start producing enzymes that break down proteins and they start making sugars on their own. Once that process is finished, then we start mashing.
Sorry, I thought yeast was a part of this process.
That's true. Yeast are these fun little living organisms that are really helpful for the process.
Yeah, they are pretty fun and useful too. Mind if I jump in here, Sam?
Okay. Please,
Alan. So, we all kind of know yeast. There's baker's yeast, and in brewing, there's something we use, brewer's yeast. And the way to say brewer's yeast in the Latin name is Saccharomyces cerevisiae. Is that right, Sam?
You got it.
Fantastic. But basically, the yeast is there to consume the sugars and excrete alcohol. And the yeast, they'll first start consuming the sugars, then they move on to more complex they first start consuming the simple sugars, and then they'll move on to more complex sugars. And that's called conditioning. And that's what happens when you rack your beer and let it sit for quite a long time.
Wow, that's really impressive. Sounds like brewery could be a science of its own.
Well, I definitely think it is. You can get a degree in brewing, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty sure there's research labs on campus here that offer a program that's like that. It's all in the microbiology department.
Well, I picked poorly. We're going to take a quick break here from our sponsors, and when we're back, we're going to get into the nitty-gritty news articles.
Last time on CITR, you heard that some kids couldn't afford to enroll in their local YMCA programs.
Oh, no. My God!
But this June 7th, there's Megathon!
Cycle, swim, run, and stretch to raise money for more spaces in YMCA youth programs.
Bam!
Go to www.vanymcamegathon.ca to create, join, or donate to a Megathon team.
Wow!
On June 7th, be somebody's hero. Wakapa does a wee bam! Wakapa! Bam's a wee kapow!
Bam's a wee pa waka.
Welcome back. You're listening to UBC Sharing Science Radio, broadcasting live from CITR 101.9 FM from UBC in Vancouver, Canada. All right, guys. Well, it sounds like we've got a bunch of things to talk about. Sam's got a guy that can get drunk on his own stomach. What's that about?
Well, it's after a surgery back in 2004, he started feeling intoxicated, as if he was drinking alcohol, but he hadn't been drinking for the last couple of days, and he didn't really know what was happening. So then, after this surgery, I guess, he started to feel progressively worse and worse, as if he was drinking 5 or 6 or 7 beers in a night.
So and you said it happened only when he was eating a lot of carbs, like carbohydrates. And do you know why that is?
Well, as we described in the fermentation process of brewing, the yeast are actually using the sugars and carbohydrates made from the malting process as fuel. And one of the byproducts of eating and metabolizing sugars and carbs is producing ethanol. So when these yeast are sitting in your intestines and they get a flow of sugar coming in from your food or drinks, then they're going to have a feast. They're going to start producing a ton of ethanol in your intestine, which then gets absorbed into your blood. And we all know what happens when you get alcohol in your blood.
Man, you know, first you got to worry about eating things giving you gas. Now you got to worry about eating things making you drunk. Like, just one thing after another.
You know? I just think about one thing there. Would he get hungover as well? The same way?
I imagine so. I don't know this for sure, but if you've got alcohol going through your system just the same way as if you consumed it instead of making it yourself and auto-brewing, I imagine that when you're coming down off of that intoxication, you probably get a hangover.
That would be the ultimate crash. First get the sugar high and then get the insulin dump and then just as well being hungover from that.
With very little control.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, it was interesting though. You said the doctors didn't really believe he had this syndrome first, and they sort of thought, oh, maybe he's sneaking a drink when he's telling everybody he's not drinking. But
yeah, can you imagine being told you're a closet alcoholic, but really you've got something sick wrong with you?
No matter how hard he tried, he just kept on saying, I'm not drinking. I just feel drunk without drinking anything.
Sounds like a house case to me, really.
I think it might have been lupus. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's never lupus.
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully we're doing our part to get the word out there. So
yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you think you have a little bit of a brewery in your stomach, it's a thing.
This study said it wasn't a very common thing to happen, but when something isn't very common, then it's not well known to the population. So if you have somebody that, let's say this guy got behind the wheel and he got pulled over for being drunk, is it his fault without knowing that he was being a brewery and he had a brewery in his stomach and he wasn't drinking anything? It was just still
intoxicated, right? So that's the main thing.
Exactly.
So, wait, hold on a second. Okay, going along this idea of being pulled over while you're drunk, and it's not you haven't been drinking. How could they test for this? Like, what's the best way for this guy, say he was in a legal issue? What's the best way for him to present his case where he wasn't drinking and it wasn't his fault?
Well, you got to do science. That's the only way. Just like they proved it that he hadn't been drinking anything and that it was the cause of microbiome, which is just, or your microbiome in your intestines, which is just your bacteria in your intestines, that was the source of the ethanol and not him drinking. So what they did in the hospital was they shut him into a room for 24 hours without any alcohol and fed him a bunch of sugar. And if they saw that his blood alcohol rose just from eating and drinking sugar, then they know it can't be that he was drinking something willingly. It was...
I get you. That makes sense now, Sam. How's about we move on from gut bacteria and getting drunk to Emil's story about what happens when you are drunk? So beer goggles, they're an actual thing?
Well, this would rather be like the beer mirror, right? After drinking, look at yourself in the mirror, is like, yeah, I look good.
But Emil, I always look good.
Yeah, I know that, Rick.
Sorry, go on. Beer mirror. So if you think you look good, then other people look good?
Well, there are studies that have shown before that when being intoxicated by alcohol, you rate other people as being more attractive. And this also shows that you think you're attractive, you yourself is more attractive as well. But no one else thinks so. So you think you're getting more attractive, but the outside world still sees you as the same person.
So hold on, Emil. I have a question. Like, how did they actually rate the attractiveness? You said that they produced some sort of fake advertising video that they had a bunch of women look at and rank them.
Yeah.
So did they actually see these people in person? Were they dancing? Were they talking? What exactly was going on?
So after drinking this drink that was supplied by this made-up company supplying these free drinks, they were told to write together a short ad to promote this company and being witty and funny and try to sell the thing. And when you try to sell something, you want to put on a attractive persona to make it appealing. And they tried their best, and then a group of females had to rate these videos that they were filming these ads. So, and then they rated them and see, okay, how attractive do you think this guy in this video is? And in the end, people that were actually drinking alcohol didn't appear any more attractive, or didn't matter if they were told they were drinking alcohol. But them themselves thought they were way more witty and attractive when they were told they were drinking alcohol, when they would think they were drunk.
So it's kind of a self-bias you impose on yourself there, right?
Yeah, totally, yeah.
That's interesting. I remember reading something published a couple of years ago, and it was looking at what sort of dance moves do women find the most attractive. And they put these motion tracker balls on people, you know, sort of like you would see for the guy who, like, dresses up and does Gollum in the movie. But they would put these motion tracker and then extract the movements and then create a 3D animation of just a generic looking male, and then show these to women, and they could rank which dances are the most effective. And the ones that are most effective are kind of where your arms are going. Maybe this is why I'm always getting it wrong, but I think that was actually where your hips are going. You get those hip movement.
It's
in
all
there.
About the hips.
So it's not the octopus style with arms all over the place? No?
Well, maybe not.
Damn it!
But I was just thinking, maybe if you're drinking more, do you get the hips more involved? Or maybe you get the arms more involved? I mean, maybe it's a... I don't know.
That's a good point that you bring up, Alan. When the women were rating the men after having drunk alcohol, or not drunk alcohol, I guess, in the control, but were they rating them based on looks and physical attractiveness, or was it something about the way that they were expressing themselves as part of this ad?
I think it was more the way of how they expressed themselves, how they came across as persons, not any bias on attractiveness physically.
I don't know, Emil. That sounds like something that's pretty hard to eliminate from a study.
Yeah.
I think we all have those self-inherent biases, whether or not we're thinking about them automatically or not. And so I'd be interested to learn more about how that control is actually a control and how they reduce other factors that could have played a role in this study.
Yeah, I should add that while they said that there is a difference, the results wasn't that significant. I mean, it was only about 20 people in each of these small subgroups, and totally there were 90 people. There were only men that were evaluated here and female that evaluated the videos. So, there is room for improvement in the study, although they were quite careful in trying to control for factors. But, yeah, as always, it's hard to get everything in there.
Yeah, for sure, Emil. Like, that's a key component of science in general. Is your sample size large enough? Are you able to accurately represent that population? Or do you have to restrict yourself and account for other factors? I don't know. Alan, any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I think definitely in psychology, that's a huge issue. Whenever I think of psychological studies and accounting for certain factors, another thing comes to mind, and that was that about 2 years ago or last year, they realized that lab rats and mice will actually react differently to being handled by male or female scientists, and that depending on who was the person who, you know, put the rat in the maze or whatever experiment they were doing, they might actually influence the rat's behavior.
What?
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So and this was, you know, something that was discovered last year, and rats and mice have been used for a long time. So often it's very hard to eliminate variables like that, especially in psychological studies. But when it comes to physics, you know, things are, well, physics is close to my heart, but it's easier to eliminate variables like that, I think.
To add to what Ricky was saying, it seems like the rating system for the men and women, for the men self-evaluating and the women evaluating the men, it doesn't seem like the rating system was done in the same way. If the females were rating the men based on their ads, but the males, were they rating themselves on their own ads? Or were they simply doing a reflection of their own physical looks? Like, what were the parameters for the men rating themselves?
I totally agree, Sam. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we're back, we're going to talk more about bubbles.
You are cordially invited to Music Waste 2015, the premier celebration of Vancouver's finest local talent. Ha ha ha! 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 Music Waste, Vancouver's annual volunteer-driven festival of local music, art, and comedy, is happening in a variety of venues across East Vancouver from Thursday, June 4th to Sunday, June 7th. Passes are available now at Horses Records, Red Cat Records, Neptune Records, and Audiopile. Music Waste is also looking for individuals interested in volunteering. For more updates, the full Music Waste schedule, and to sign up to volunteer, visit www.musicwaste.ca.
Hey, Quincy! Where you at?
Welcome back. You're listening to UBC Sharing Science Radio. And we're going to talk about bubbles.
So, Emil, are you really excited to talk about bubbles?
Bubbles, 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 bubbles!
Yes, he is. All right, Alan. Tell me more about bubbles.
Well, where to start? I mean, I guess let's start where bubbles start, right? So you look inside your beer or whatever carbonated beverage, and those little bubbles just seem to form just kind of out of nothing. So what we need to remember is that in beer and other carbonated beverages, there's actually carbon dioxide dissolved in the water, and that's why your can of pop or can of beer is under pressure. As soon as the pressure lowers, when you open up the beer, you pour it into a glass, you pour your Coke out, the pressure is much lower. Now the carbon dioxide can escape because the pressure of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is much lower than the pressure of carbon dioxide inside that can of beer.
Right, so that's that what's the word, Alan?
Nucleation site.
Yeah.
Yeah, so where do the bubbles form? They want to escape, but where are they going to form? You look inside your glass of beer, and you see the bubbles are forming on the side. Often if the bottom is scratched, you'll see the bubbles forming in scratches. And these scratches, these imperfections on the glass, are nucleation sites. And bubbles need sort of a rough little surface to form around.
So it's kind of like when you're trying to freeze something too, right?
That's right. So this is known as what's in physics is what's called a phase change. The carbon dioxide is changing from essentially a dissolved phase to a gaseous phase. When you're freezing an ice cube, you're changing the water from a liquid phase to a frozen phase. And if you actually have a really perfect container, no imperfections at all, and the water is very, very clean, you can cool water below zero. That's called supercooled water. But as soon as you put that as soon as you introduce a tiny imperfection into that supercooled water, maybe like another tiny little crystal of ice or a piece of dust, it will instantly freeze, just like that. So you need that nucleation site to enable phase changes.
So what you're saying is when my mom tells me I'm super cool, that's not what she's talking about?
A phase change?
Yeah.
You are super cool, Ricky.
Yeah, thanks, yes. Alan.
Yeah.
And sorry, Alan, I'm going to have to pop your bubble here. Let's move on. Let's talk about this physics machine people are making. Does it really, really help with the perfect pour? Sound waves and fluid dynamics, guys? What do you think?
Well, what do you mean by a physics machine? Why? How is physics in a machine?
Well, it's the application of the machine. These guys are saying that they've engineered a device that gives you the perfect foam on every beer, every time. It can make a bad beer taste great. It can make a good beer taste better. I don't know. I don't really buy it.
Oh, you mean like physics, like F-I-Z-Z?
Yeah, physics.
Not F-I-Z-Z. Physics.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks for the correction there.
Yeah, well, you said it was an Indiegogo campaign, and I'm always a little bit suspicious of these self-funded. Did they release a lot of specifications of how it actually works?
It's patent pending at the moment, so they're just trying to raise money, and I haven't really read anything spectacular about it. But it's an interesting idea. Sound waves in your beer?
But it is kind of like a beer tap thing. And can you load your own beer onto there?
Yeah, so it's supposed to be portable. You can have your own beer. But it sounds like I've seen this somewhere else before, personally.
Was it on the Dr. Oz show?
I no comment. I don't want to. I swear.
But what is the advantage of having a really thick foam head on your beer? Is it do you keep the carbon dioxide in there, or what is the point of it?
Yeah, what's wrong with my foam head that I just poured in my beer?
So nothing's wrong with your foam head, Sam. But what they're saying is that it improves all five senses for you. It looks better, it tastes better, it smells better, and all this other stuff. I'm sure if you put your finger in the foam, it would feel better as well.
Does it hear better or sound better?
That's undecided yet. We'll find out later.
Yeah, you need to have that right sound when you pour the beer. I don't know what...
That is a good sound. Yeah.
But I've also heard about that you need to keep the perfect angle with the beer. If you have like a regular beer tap, to get the perfect foam, it's like some certain angle you need to have the beer and then consecutively then shift it.
It's all in the wrist.
Yeah.
It's all in the wrist.
So there is definitely technique out there. The big sell for this is craft beer. People are trying to imitate craft beer, and they don't want to, personally. Some say it takes too much skill and time to learn the perfect pour, and this machine, the physics machine, is supposed to help with that. I don't know, though, guys. Do you think it's worth spending $200 on this machine?
I doubt it.
I can barely afford beer at this point, so...
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, too. So,
yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, I'm going to say that until I've seen more evidence about this machine, I don't know. The jury's out on the physics machine here, guys.
Yeah, I'm perfectly happy to just sit back and watch the bubbles on any beer. That's good enough for me.
Yeah, bubbles.
All right, that's all the time we have for tonight's show. We'd like to thank Wes Pride for the lovely music. We'd also like to thank Jason Fernando and the entire Sharing Science executive for their efforts on getting us live. Catch us next week when we slam down some salmon science. Up next is Sam Swatch's Hideaway. Later days.